Let's put in a real title to this, although it might not be really what I'm going to talk about, but let's just for fun call this basis vs. nice basis. Because okay, let's add this. Typically, I don't need an S. Okay, now, so, you cut my concentration. He does that all the time. So let's frame this in a classical setting, general math setting. So maybe a classical point of view on this might be the following. You have a vector space and some nice natural linear transform of the vector space, and this is the philosophical part. So you don't take notes. This is just philosophy now. Suppose that the eigenvalues of T are all distinct and different eigenvalues, V being finite dimensional of dimension n, then you know that you're going to be able to pick up a very natural basis of V made out of eigenvectors. So the picture tells you which basis you should pick up. It's not any basis of V that is of interest, but a basis that is made out of specific eigenvectors of T. And this has been exploited, and the finite dimensional part is just for fun here, because truly in the nice example there's no restriction like that. But this has been used for a long time in math. Typically V is a space of function, and T you have some operators on functions, and all special function theory, in a sense, can be looked at from this point of view. So maybe you could think of this basis versus nice basis opposition, or as saying sometimes it's very natural to pick up a specific basis for a problem, because then you're going to be able to do wonderful things with it. So let's, instead of going on with this, I could give a whole class on special function if I remember the parts of it that I once knew. But let's go closer to our approach. So this is the typical situation when we talk about sure functions or MacDonald polynomials. Or Schubert polynomials. short function in representation theory things we've mentioned over the years in this meeting, why we should look at short function. MacDonald polynomials have not come up this year much, but you remember that we talked about this in previous years. And just to tie in with our first lecture this morning, they come up when you look at specific alternates as diagonal harmonics of the symmetric group, and then look at this, the space you obtain by, depending on your point of view, let's say from my point of view, by looking at all partial derivatives of these, and you get some spaces that have dimension n factorial, and then if you compute their characters, MacDonald polynomials come up. But from the point of view of this classical point of view of this classical setup, they also come up because they are eigenfunctions for very nice operators, and these operators, they come up from physics and other places, but specifically physics, statistical physics, or the so-called Calogero-Sutherland models of how elementary particles behave in specific, in some specific setups that I might be able to remember about, but let's not go too deep into that because it's going to show very rapidly that I don't know lots about physics. But they do come up this way. Now, Schubert polynomials also come up naturally as a basis of this ring that we have not seen for a long time, since you went out to eat for a while, you've not looked at it. So when you look at the coinvariant ring and you try to find a coinvariant space and you try to find a nice basis of it, one of these, there are several, but one of these is the Schubert polynomial. And this is more, this come up more naturally when you think of this as the cohomology ring of the flag, complete flag manifold. And this is one example of a nice basis. There are people here in the room that know much more about Schubert polynomial than I do, but let me just remind you a couple of things about them, because then we could mention some of the direction we should start looking into in our kind with the interest we have here in this room. So you start off with x delta, which is x1 to the n minus 1 times x2 to the n minus 2 up to xn minus 1. And xn is there, but with exponent 0, so that's why I'm not writing it. So that's one monomial. And then you use you start with this monomial and you apply successively divided Nantel wears on differences. Divided difference operators. So the way to build Schubert polynomial is just you start off with this guy and you successively apply divided difference operators. Delta I applied to f of x is, I'll write it this way, f of x minus si f of x divided by xi minus xi plus 1. And what is si? Si is the transposition ii plus 1. That's as a permutation. And here I'm considering the usual action of si on a polynomial f of x in n variables, so x is x1 up to xn, and si means you switch the variable xi and xi plus 1 inside this polynomial, then this difference is easily seen to be divisible by the xi minus xi plus 1. So you get a polynomial here, and that's the divided difference operator on fx. Now, in the symmetric group, you have, so you know that these are generators with the relations that the square of the adjacent transposition is the identity. Then there are the usual Coxeter or Braid relations. Si, Si plus 1 is Si plus 1, Si, Si plus 1, and Si, Sj is Sj, Si. If I and j differ by more than 1. Now, it's just an exercise to check that these operators satisfy the Braid relations. And so the square is 0, but if you write down an expression for a permutation in time in term of the generators in such a way that it's minimal, then you never get to use this relation. And just the Braid relation come up, so that it makes sense to define the following. So the Schubert polynomial associated to W0 is the permutation which has the largest number of inversion. This is the permutation, and 1 goes to n, 2 goes to n minus 1, and blah blah blah, 2, 1. So that's omega 0. Let's remind you that number of inversion of a permutation is the number of pairs ij such that sigma I, I is less than j, but sigma I is larger than sigma j. So I'm reversing the order of I and j when you have Si and j. And this is the permutation with the largest number of inversion. And I will write, instead of inversion, I'll write, so these are the inversion of sigma, and I write L of sigma, the length of sigma, to be the number of inversion of sigma. So W0 is the permutation that has the largest number of inversion. And you define the Schubert polynomial SW0 to be X delta. And then for any other permutation, W, let's write it this way. For any other permutation, sigma, imagine that sigma is written in form WSI, such that the length of WSI is larger than the length of W. In fact, they cannot change by more than 1. And another way of looking at this is that the length of a permutation is the minimal number of generators of this form that I need in order to write down that permutation as a product of the generators. So the Schubert polynomial associated to sigma is del I Schubert polynomial associated to omega. So I'm just, essentially, I'm writing down that the Schubert polynomial corresponding to a given permutation is obtained by repeatedly hitting, or applying a sequence of divided difference operators to this monomial in some organized fashion, and that's going to give me these polynomials, and they, so there'll be what I'm doing it on the right. What? Oh well, yeah. What? Yeah, I done it the wrong way. Thank you. Sigma W. That's, thank you. So I'm, so this is the bigger guy, more inversion, and I'm bringing it down. You see that if I, eventually if I do that, I'll come to zero, because the degree goes down by one each time. And it, one can check, it's just, it's a whole story, that these polynomials, there are n factorial of them, and that this is well defined because of the fact that the divided difference operators satisfy the Brady relation, and lots of things. Now, these Schubert polynomials, we could talk about them the whole hour and say very nice things, and that would be interesting. But they give a basis for this, which has very nice geometrical properties, because they correspond to Schubert cycles, if you think of this as the cohomology ring of the Flagg manifold. So it's not any basis, but it's a nice basis. But even more than that, they have beautiful multiplication properties. They're hard to understand. We do not understand everything about these yet. But they are among these nice basis things that you should have. And it's nice also to see that, in a sense, they contain sure polynomials, because if you restrict the number of variables in sure polynomials, you see them as coming as special examples of these. So it's a very nice thing. And maybe when we look at other examples, we should ideally be able to find such nice basis with good properties. I haven't planned on talking a lot about these, just to mention them, but there's something that also might be worth looking into. It's the quantum version. So that's there's lots of things going on in along these lines. People are studying Gromov-Witten invariants, and this is linked to that study. There's a quantum cohomology version of the Flagg manifold that is over there. And let me just mention a couple of things so that, just to light up your interest in this, if it might. So, in the quantum version, there's an analog of this space, and the only thing you do is, so you have Q of X, that's the variables X1, X2, up to Xn, and then you add to this another bunch of variables, Q1, Q2, up to Qn minus 1, and you mod out by a version of the symmetric ideal that we have over there. I'll write Inq, a Q version of this space, ideal over there. And I and Q is pan, is has generators E1, E2, etc. Like here, I could have used as generators for this ideal the elementary symmetric function E1, E2, just as Mike Zabrocki mentioned earlier today. Now here you have slightly different generators, and they come up this way. So the I don't know if you recall the definition of elementary symmetric function, but you look at the polynomial p of t minus xi, I going from 1 to n, you expand this, and these, they come up as coefficients of these polynomials. Maybe here, the way I've set up things up, there will be signs that I take care of, but essentially they come up as coefficients of these. Now, over there, it's the same. These EIs will come up as coefficient of the characteristic polynomial of this matrix. So you have x1, q1, and then fill up with zeros, then minus 1, x2, q2, then fill up with zeros, then minus 1, x3, q3, and you go along these three diagonals in the same and complete the matrix. So you take this matrix and then look at its characteristic polynomial, and then take the coefficients, and you'll get these. And there's a notion of quantum Schubert polynomial, and all this goes on. So the point here for me was just to underline that maybe we should also look along the variants of things that we're thinking of here. We should look at quantum versions of everything. And all of this is you have to be careful to set things up correctly, but everything goes through. All the story. I have to think about this. I mean, the details. No. You don't get the same. You have something slightly different. For instance, let me just put up. E1 is the same as small e1, but e2 is the small e2 plus things that are plus things that are of degree 1 in the cubes. So if I'm not wrong, then it's going to go round. So you have to, it's not a so simple straightforward generalization of the thing, but that's the right thing to look at. No. Because here you'll have things of degree 1 in the QI. So I think it's just Q1 plus Q2 plus. You have Qn minus 1, so you have to, be careful. Don't jump to conclusion. I'm just saying, if you want to look at this, just go and it's worth generalizing our ideas in that direction. Now, I did not prepare the quantum talk. I just wanted to mention it along here. Okay, so now let's go to something that is closer to what we've been doing. So I'll go over some stuff that has been mentioned, so bear with me, please, because I want to extend things in another direction than the quantum version. So I'll start with, let's suppose we have a graded algebra and so a both finitely generated so a and a is the sum d larger or equal to 0 a d. If you want, you can think of d as the degree. And as usual, we define the Hilbert series of A with parameter q to be the sum d larger or equal to 0 dimension of these ADs q to the d. The reason why I'm mentioning this is my setup might not be the ring of polynomials, so I want this to be a little slightly different. And let's suppose that n is any of the three following things. Say it's the order of 1 as a pole of HAQ, just or the maximum number. So implicitly, I'm saying that these are equal in my setup here. Maximum number of algebraically independent elements in A. Oops. Or it's the minimum number of suppose I choose the homogeneous elements G1, G2 up to GN such that the dimension of A divided by the ideal generated by these is in A is finite. So as a vector space, yeah. So yeah, let's call it K for fun. But probably I don't know a lot about characteristic not being equal to 0. So if I get, let's say for fear of getting into trouble, let's say it's not. But if things work out, go ahead. You're allowed to try. So I'm going to consider a finitely graded algebra in which you have these properties, that all of these are equal to n, and then g1, g2 up to gn we call a homogeneous system of parameters. It's sad that it's not in another order than this. You could write down posh or sharp or whatever. Find a nice anagram of these, but HSOP. So I have a finitely generated graded algebra with some homogeneous system of parameters for it that are algebraically independent. Okay, yeah. Now I want these G1, G2, Gn to be algebraically independent elements in and such that this quotient is finite. So I want these two properties too. So this is what? Yeah, that's the cruel dimension. N. Okay, so maybe for some reason this is old stuff for the geometric ground, and for other reason it's old stuff for the combinatorics ground. But anyway, just so we agree. Okay, now, basis. So I'm going to suppose I have B. I'm trying to stick with my notation. I try to be careful. B is some set F1, F2, up to F big N. Okay? And let's suppose that this is a basis of this quotient down here. As an ideal in A. And so if I have such a basis, I'll be able to write, because of all these conditions, all this stuff that I said here, I'll be able to write any element of A. Now there's some exaggeration here, because if you say what I'm going to say to a undergrad that's learning quotients, is going to say, how can you write something like this? Doesn't make sense. Anyway, I'm giving you the task of taking care of these small detail. Any element of A can be written. So in a sense, I'm saying that I've chosen these well, as representative of these classes here, in the form, and P of A can be written as a sum, I going from 1 to N, Fi, Qi of G1, G2, Gn. So there, I'm just saying that there exists such an expression, might be many, for a given P. So this is just reading that over there in a simple fashion. Okay, now another way of stating this is that the set of Fi, Q, no, not Q, what did I say here? G to the alpha, with I between 1 and N, and big N, and alpha, I'm using vector, what did you call it this morning instead of vector notation? You said something else, I liked it. N to the N, so NG here to the alpha is G1 to the A1, G2 to the A2, GN to the AN. Alpha being A1, A2, AN. What is, how do you call this? What? Multi-index. I call it vector notation, because these are vectors, and then when you multiply, you use vectors, vector addition for the exponents. Anyway, so this is a set of generators for, linear generators for A. I'm not stating that it's linearly independent, just a, and the Hilbert series of A is coefficient-wise smaller than or equal to the following series. So here I'm putting the degree of the Fi's, I going from 1 to N, that's the numerator, and the in the denominator so the DIs here are the degrees of the GIs, and that's been mentioned essentially this morning by Mike in another setup that he was looking at Hilbert series that were equal to some expression like this. And this means coefficient-wise, smaller. Maybe I should give it a name to this. I'll call it CMA. Q, just for fun, okay? Now, this is just a name for this expression, okay? For such an expression. Okay, now, CM, where should I go? Over here. So CM, as some of you might have guessed, stands for Cohen Macaulay. Too long. Online. And Cohen Macaulay, one very elementary way of stating it means that P as a unique expression as a sum of the form written over there and maybe now is the good time to tell you why I my title is basis versus BS. Nice basis. A nice basis would be something here for which this would be easy to compute. But, and by easy to compute, I don't mean that you ask the computer, that's easy, but that you have some nice formula for this. If you choose a basis that's easy to describe, you might have hard time to get nice expression for this. And so maybe that's the one possible criteria for a nice basis. Another way of stating this property, so these are equivalent, say, so one is all equivalent. That HA of Q is CM of Q, CMA of Q, so that you have equality over there. Third way of stating it is that A is free. Oops. As a K G1, G2, GN module. Maybe could call this G like this. And four, all the same, is that, and Mike mentioned this morning, is that A is, as a vector space, isomorphic to the module tensor A over G1, G2, GN. So this is the Cohen-Macaulay property. And G's also might, I'm just saying that the good basis for F, what? No, he's saying, no, what he's saying, Mike, is not that it's independent or independent, he's saying that the my undefined notion of nice basis has to do with the G's, apparently. But in the others, I'm not giving any explicit basis. So, and the ideal could be presented in many ways. Now, the basis, maybe this is a joint problem. If you choose the presentation of the ideal, there might be a nice basis associated to that presentation, and you're totally right. That's for sure, because then it might be that for another basis of another presentation of the ideal, you would have lots of problems to compute this in terms of the G's. Now, often what happens is that if you have a nice basis here, this can be written up some clearly as an element of the ring generated by the G's, but it's not specific. The G's that might not appear explicitly in this, but some other.
For example, if you look at your example of polynomials, take the polynomial ring, take the polynomial ring itself, and take the two different bases of one of the things
the H's or the elementary, or the power sums, or the homogeneous. The complete homogeneous symmetric function, those are sum of all, no, depends.
Those would be different
G's, they would probably make easier, depending on what you choose, the computation of the coefficient. And I have, now, this is not, I did not prepare any specific example of this, but there are examples where sure functions are a good thing to use here, because you have very nice expressions for the, so you write this element in terms of sure function, sometimes it comes out beautifully, but it depends on the setup. I just wanted to mention which direction we should go when I talk about this nice property, because the question has been raised in our discussion here. That's a natural reaction. 20th century math was all about saying, expressing things basis-free. And now, in the 21st century, we're saying, look, if you have a nice basis, this is very powerful. I want to explain a little about why this is. Now, each individual problem has this very nice natural base that comes up. Anyway, so that's the philosophical part. There's no actual definition or theorem. It's just a broad description of things. Oh, we might have examples a little later on. What did I do here? What? No, they're not. Oh, no. Careful here. Sure functions are not good for this, because they're indexed by partitions. Now, if you have to, this is easy when you choose. Typically, if this is the symmetric functions that you're talking about, then I'm not going to for a while. But if these were a symmetric function, you would choose this of degree one, this of degree two, blah blah blah, and then it's more natural to do it either with power sums or elementary symmetric function or complete homogeneous symmetric function. Sure functions I'm mentioning here as they appear as a linear basis of symmetric function, not but what I'm saying is that often this guy here, when you're dealing with symmetric function in a good setup, this guy here has a very beautiful expression in terms of sure function. So it means that I'm trying to answer Mike's which one is more important. Depends, because here you might express things without explicit references to the G's. So that's whatever formula you have, whatever, it might be an operator here that projects onto symmetric a symmetric part in a good way, that's going to give you this coefficient. might be a Skelpadok, because in some kind of version of Skelpadok that's going to give you these coefficients. You have many different ways. But I'm saying that if you have a nice basis, if you want a philosophically guidance principle, Zen guidance principle, for the, I'm not into Zen anyway, but for the choice of FIs, you'd like something good to happen here. So maybe that's long enough about this, because this was just a side remark to explain why. Nice. Anyway. So, now, I'm going to do one last general stuff and then go to a specific situation. I've been talking too long about this general stuff. This is my page 3. I have 10. Very bad. So I might have to go a little faster on the... So, yeah, in the combinatorics come into play in this whole setup because of the following, essentially. So, all in the same setup, if we can show that the following is true, that the dimension of A over G1, G2, Gn is smaller or equal to the limit as Q goes to 1 of 1 minus QD1, 1 minus QDn of HA of Q, and this better give something which is finite. This is a positive integer in general because of say, suppose this converges to a positive integer which is smaller than infinity, and you have this inequality, then everything follows. What? As vector space. Yeah. Whenever I write dimension, vector space. Yeah. So, now, this guy here, maybe I... So, this. Let me make this more down to earth. This guy here, maybe I explicitly show you a set of generators for it. Whatever. And here, this is a bound that I have on that I can compute. Should I write? Maybe I'd like CM. CMQ. Yeah, here. Maybe I should use this notation over there. Anyway, whenever I have this inequality, then all this holds. That's the only thing I have to check in the setup. So I just need to show that my I have not too big a number as a dimension of this space. And then I'm done. All of these properties come out. What?
I'm trying to understand what the goal is. Are you trying to find G1 to
Gn? No. I'm just saying that if I want to study this space, I have a space that I'm studying. Let's say this guy here. And I know some...
Yeah.
That, you'll get the numerator over there. Okay? So what I'm saying is that if you know that, then the limit as Q goes to 1 is this big N that you get over here. So if you know that you have inequality, then all of this follows. That's the simple thing that you have to do. So let me give you one. That my, so that was the, just the general background stuff. Let me give you one setup where it's a different story than what we've told up to now, but all of this works in general in this new setup. So now this is bad because I have I talk too much about general stuff, and all the rest of my more specific stuff is fun, but I won't get time to talk about. So I'm going to give an example with nice basis. You'll see. So I'll give two descriptions of nice basis if time allows, and one of them will be one of them will work, but not completely described, and the other is completely described, but still conjectural. Anyway, so the setup is as follows. I'm going to define R quasi-symmetric polynomials, and so that'll be some ring, and A will be the ring of quasi-symmetric polynomial. That'll be my A. And then I'm going to do, sitting inside R quasi-symmetric polynomials are symmetric polynomial as usual. So I'll look at the quotient, your usual quotient like this, as before. But now these are going to be the, this is going to be the ideal generated in this ring by symmetric polynomial as usual. And I want to show you that this has dimension n factorial, whatever r. So that if I'm cut off from finishing, at least you'll know what I was aiming at. So we introduce an action of the symmetric group parameterized by r on polynomials. The way I'm going to do it, at least some of the things I mentioned in my philosophical part will get recycled here, so I'm not totally lost. So the action of the transposition SI on the monomial XI to the A, XI plus 1 to the B, is going to be to correspond to the following. I'll exchange XI plus 1 and XI if in the otherwise situation. So in the otherwise case, I exchange as usual. But sometimes I do not exchange. And the times when I do not exchange is when both the exponents, A and B, are larger or equal to R. So R is some threshold. And above that threshold, I'm blocked if I want to exchange XI and XI plus 1. This is weird, but one can verify that the SI together with this action, this you have compatibility with the Braid's relations. So it makes sense to, so this extends to an action of the whole symmetric group on monomials. Here I didn't mention what I'll do for other variables, but the other variables are not touched by SI. The SI acts, exchange the indices of the variables if their exponents are not too big. Now, if R is 0, I'm not saying anything, so that's the usual thing. If R is equal to 1, that's known as quasi-symmetric polynomial. And R larger than one, it's new. It's a new subject. What? Oh, I didn't mention. Thank you. I'm being too pressed for time and doing things stupidly. So the invariant a quasi-symmetric polynomial is a polynomial that is invariant under this action of the symmetric group. So it's the set of Px such that sigma star r Px is Px for all sigma in Sn. So that's quasi-symmetric polynomial. Thank you. Happily, one of us is here. Up. Yeah. I'm going to go on a little. Okay. So, yeah. So that's R quasi-symmetric. These have been introduced by Florent Hivert. The version, the R version that Florent has been introduced by Florent Hivert, and quasi-symmetric, this is goes back to, you might say Stanley, but officially it's Gesell. But implicitly, it's in Stanley's work. But although he did not present them with this action in mind, they were presented in a slightly different way by Gesell. Now, Florent Hivert has shown that we have just a basis. And the emphasis here is just. It's a basis, but it's not a nice basis. A basis of this space of R quasi-symmetric polynomial is obtained as follows. You choose a vector in n to the k of such that the minimal element of the vector is larger or equal to r. And let's say I'm going to stick with r being larger or equal to 1 for what I'm going to say now. And then you choose a partition lambda with k of length L. This is the number of parts of the partition. And with all parts smaller than R. So here, here you have a vector of parts larger than R and a composition of parts smaller than R. And this at M alpha lambda of X, which is just the sum over of Y to the alpha M lambda to the Z. Do we say Z or Z in Canada? It's complicated. It's a cultural thing. Anyway, you decide. So I'm going to cut the set of variables in two parts. One which is the same length as some variables. I choose as many variables as the length of alpha. And oops, I forgot to mention that K plus alpha plus L is smaller or equal to N in these two guides. So you cut the set of variables in two, and these are ordered in the same order that they came into the X. So that's important for the definition over there. And then M lambda is the monomial symmetric function, just exactly as Mike mentioned earlier, this with index by partitions. So that's all monomials with the fixed bunch of exponents described by lambda. On the set of variables Z. So that's, and Florent Hivert has shown that this is a basis of R space over there. Let's call it A. Depends on R, but call it A. Okay, now, in the case R equal 1, A while back in 2001, Christoph Weitenauer and I conjectured that the theorem that I want to state in general is true. So, R equal 1 in 2-1 we conjectured that, I'll state it this way, that A is free as a sim and module, which is, go look at any of these and it's the same. So, and then it was shown in 2002, proven by Garcia and Wallach. If I had time, I'd tell you a fun story about this, but no time. So, now, Florent Hivert introduced this, and a little more than a year ago, he conjectured that the same statement is free, is true, excuse me. So, I'm going to recycle now. Hivert, erasing the condition on R, hop, so 4, 5, Hivert, if it's in between 2004 and 2005, for us, it's l'hiver. For those who don't speak French, that's winter, but no T. Conjectured that A is free as a sim and module, and this was proven in 2005 by Garcia Wallach. So I could recycle the story here. Now, their proof relied on some work we did with Nantel, and I just can't resist showing this, at least a small part of it, to you. And if you want to escape now, do. But I assure you, I won't do more than 8 more minutes. No, I insist. Not more than, although I'll throw away the other stuff. But those are, okay, so, and is conjecture, if you frame it as in terms of what this, the Hilbert series for this guy is going to be this, yeah, so let's call R this quotient here. So in terms of this, this conjecture boils down to showing that the Hilbert series of this space is the sum over all permutation in Sn of something that's fun for combinatorialists, and that we can recycle about things that we mentioned earlier, yesterday, whatever. So major index, Christoph used that. N minus 6 sigma. So essentially, if you could show that the dimension of it, this is all equivalent to showing that the dimension of the space, the quotient space over there, is an analog of n factorial. Very strange. It's q to, so r equals 0 is the q factorial that was mentioned this morning by Mike. Christoph mentioned things along these lines. If you put R equal 1, this is the thing that we studied with Christoph a while back, and Hivert got this very nice formula here. That wasn't the case. R equal 1 was not even, this was not the way we would state things with Christoph. So this is a formula of Hivert, although he says that he deduced it from work of Reutenauer and Gessel. And fixed sigma is the number of fixed points of the permutation, by the way. So that's R. And I got hooked into this because Adiano was working on this, going nowhere, he told me, with Garcia Wallach. They were hitting walls and walls and walls on studying this. And I got hooked into this because Adiano Garcia mentioned to me a nice recursion for this guy. So we don't know if this is equal. This has to be shown. Let's call this phi n r of q, or simply phi n r. And Garcia told me on the phone that he had a nice recurrence for this. And this that recurrence was a generalization of stuff we'd done with Christophe that allowed us to do lots of things about the first r equal 1 case that I have no time to mention, but he mentioned that phi and r of n, phi and r of q is, let me, phi n minus 1 r plus q to the n phi n r minus 1 minus phi n minus 1 r. Like this, I just deleted the q's just to make the formula simpler. So look, for if you set q equal 1, these two guys, they vanish you. So yeah, so you have something much simpler that comes up. Anyway, and phi 0 of n is this analog of the q factorial, the n factorial that Mike mentioned this morning. And the r equal 1 case, that was exactly the recurrence that we had stated with Christophe a while back, that allowed us to come up with a conjecture basis for this space. Now, I immediately said to Adiano, being sure of myself, that because of this, I would be able to, inside of one day, to give him a nice basis of this space so they could go ahead, maybe, and do something. Couldn't. Worked that it couldn't. Took me a while, I don't remember. But to go to the punchline, eventually we, and I mentioned Nantel, we were able with Nantel to use another recurrence that is slightly more complicated, but works. So this is equivalent to this, let me write it up. So it's two recurrences of one phi, one psi, and one of each one is described in term of the other. So this is a nice recurrence to solve, Mike. If you want, I'm joking, Mike. Don't be annoyed with me. And on the web, don't notice the stupid things I'm saying. Q to the r. Phi n minus 1 r, so you have this double recurrence where psi here. Okay? With the initial conditions phi 0 of r equal phi 1 of r equal 1 and psi 0 of r equal psi 1 of r equal 0. And what's the crux of this is that here in this recurrence you have you involve phi n of r and phi n of r minus 1. And this is the thing that makes life very hard. I could explain, but I don't have time. But however, this is just, in a sense, r is almost not there. Okay, because everything is in terms of phi r. But for these very special small parts here, where you have exponents. So what happened, I'm going to conclude here, is that because of that and some more talk and properties that we showed, we were able to come up with a conjectured basis. That's the nice part of my talk, conjecture, nice basis, conjecture basis for the quotient that are independent in a sense. You see, I'm going to give you the same basis for all these spaces in one strike. You'll have to read things slightly differently, but it's going to be all the same. So the way I describe it is by writing, the basis is going to be the form M to sub alpha, where alpha is one of these things that where all the a vector where all the entries of the vector were bigger than the threshold are. So alpha is A1, A2, AK with the AIs larger or equal to R. Now to make life nicer, I'm going to use this notation. A is going to be stand for R, excuse me. B is going to stand for R plus 1. C is going to stand for R plus 2. So I can use the alphabet to write down these indices, and this is going to be a word in ABC. And the R independent stuff is going to be that it's going to be the same basis for whatever R. Just read the letters in the right way. So the only place where R plays a role is here. And then the rest is done. And the basis is obtained like this with alpha in the following set. Now, once again, maybe you won't like my notation, but to write things down easily, I'll use addition. I'll write a set as a sum of words. A set of words, instead of a set of words, I'll formally add them. So AN is the base. To be very precise, M alpha, the basis is like this. So that's the basis. And I need only describe to you what AN is. And AN is AN minus 1 plus BN. And BN is AN minus 2 times Z times A plus B plus blah, blah, blah up to Y. I'll explain in a second. Plus BN minus 1 times A plus B plus C up to Y. Now, along these lines, Y is the next to last letter in this. So, depending on the choice of N, N is the number of variables in my story, depending on the choice of N, the number of letters is going to change. Z stands for the last letter. Y stands for the next to last letter. So it's not the true Y and the true Z, but it's just easier to write this way. And this is non-commutative notation, so I'm multiplying a word here, pick a word here, pick Z, pick one letter here, and then pick a word here and one letter here. Either of these will be elements of BN. And AN is the union of these two. No, it's just a different A. So that's the basis, and it follows the same recursion as the what's over there on the other blackboard. So it's okay. And using, inspired by this, although they didn't do it this way, Wallach and Garcia were able to prove the conjecture, although they didn't prove that this works. They used another nice basis. So this is the nice explicit conjectured basis. They have a nice implicit conjectured basis. A nice explicit proven basis. And their basis, they appear as eigenvalues, eigenfunctors, eigenvectors for specific eigenvalues, a very, very nice operator that I if I would have time, I would explain, but this is too much now. I stop. Excuse me. No. That's why I, no, we have to, there are lots of things to do. Oh yeah, thank you. Similar. 1 and 0. One is the empty word, and 0 is the zero element of this. So it's an empty set, and so you have to be careful. But it's the same.